Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Wednesday, March 21st. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. On today's show, Mike Zavagano from Fear the Sword and the Cavalytics podcast is here to talk about what decisions the Cavs have to make about their rotation, not just right now, but when the playoffs start, talking about Kevin Love's role, Rodney Hood and Kyle Korver, a whole bunch of deep dives that I think you're really going to enjoy and get you ready, not just for Wednesday's game, which is a very interesting game in its own right, but what is to come over the next few weeks as the Cavs deal with their coaching situation and a whole lot more. On a more somber note, Kyle Korver will not be playing Wednesday. As Mike and I recorded, you'll hear this near the end of the pod. The team issued a statement that he is going to be away from the team due to the death of his younger brother, Kirk. Kirk was 27. He died unexpectedly, and this is why Kyle was away from the team last week as well. So condolences to the Korver family, and no timeline on when Kyle will be back, but the most important thing for him now is to be with his family after the death of his brother, Kirk. Now, TBD on a whole bunch of other Cavs injuries as I recorded this introduction, but we'll see if Rodney Hood is back, if other guys are back, what the Cavs are going to do at that shooting guard spot. Additionally, want to give you guys a tease of something that is coming on Locked On NBA this Thursday. David Locke, the founder of this network, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, the host of Locked On Jazz, and one of the hosts of Locked On NBA, has an interview with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. Here, you're going to hear two clips. First up here is Adam Silver on the importance of players having their voice heard in the general conversation around a variety of topics.
I think the signature this season has been, in a divisive world, you have allowed your players' voices to be heard. How much of a gamble do you feel that is, and what is allowing you to do that?
Well, first of all, it's I'm not sure I would characterize it as allowing them. I think our players are going to speak out on issues that are important to them, in part because it's been a tradition in this league. You know, I mentioned this when I was in Los Angeles for the All-Star game. Bill Russell happened to be sitting there when I had my press conference, and I remember doing some research on this issue that 55 years ago, 1963, All-Star game had been in L.A. He had been the MVP. And that summer, he stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial when Dr. King gave his iconic I Have a Dream speech. So that's nothing new in this league. And again, I think it's a little bit part of the DNA that's passed on from player to player. In addition, I look at the core values of this league, especially one I feel we have a responsibility. 25% of our players come from outside of the United States, and I think an American's ability, somebody living in this country's ability to speak out on issues that are important to them, is something that we should be supportive of. And I've had that conversation directly with players. It doesn't mean that they don't also need to be respectful at the same time. I think that comes with wearing an NBA uniform, and also, you know, make sure that their platforms they're speaking on are appropriate and that it's not interfering with their playing the game. But I think there's an added benefit for our fans that they see these young men are truly multidimensional. And I recognize, to your point about risk, not everyone's going to agree with everything they say. Certainly I don't agree with everything our players say. But I like to believe that, you know, for the rest of our fan base, certainly those people here in the United States, that they are supportive of them expressing political views, cultural views, just like they would be of any American.
And now here is Silver on the possibility of there being European soccer-style tournaments added to the NBA at some point, which is something I, as a big European soccer fan, I think would be a really, really cool addition.
I went back today and actually listened to an old interview you and I did, and one of the things you said was, I would like to have more than one trophy. So what is your vision on cups, and when do you think it can ever happen?
You know, you've done your research. I mean, I continue to covet, you know, other leagues, especially when I look at international soccer, where there's more things to play for than just one championship trophy. So back in the league office, we've looked at midseason tournaments. We've looked at playoff play-in tournaments. I would just say we're still studying it. You know, I'm balancing it against tradition. And I think there was a period there where people thought the All-Star game had outlived its usefulness, but then it bounced right back this year. And I think that came with a tweak of sorts where, you know, we changed the format, had captains, created a little different incentive for the players to be more competitive on the floor. And I thought it really worked. So we're sticking with All-Star now. I think in terms of other tournaments, we're going to study things. We're going to look at other. We're especially looking at other things around how teams move into the playoffs. Maybe that's also a way to deal with the rebuilding issue that's become so prominent in the league now. But nothing to announce yet.
So there you have it. Here's today's pod. Me and Mike Zavgano talking about all the Cavs decisions that are coming and what this team really has to figure out between now and when the playoffs start. I hope you guys enjoy, and we'll talk to you on the other side.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, Mike, looking at what's going on with the Cavs right now, there are so many different, I think, decisions that Ty Lue and Larry Drew and all of the different members of the coaching staff are going to have to make. I think we're looking at a team right now that, because they haven't played a ton together, because they're going to have to get a lot of guys comfortable with each other, some of this is going to be hard to really evaluate. There's not going to be big sample sizes going into the playoffs when we look at this team. I think that's just inevitable at this point. But there are some decisions they're going to have to make that I think we sort of know they're going to have to make. And we're going to run through some of them today. So we're going to start with Kevin Love. He comes back on Monday, I thought played about as well as the Cavs would want him to. He maybe didn't play great in his last stint, but I thought his first three little bits of the game on his minutes restriction, he looked excellent. Played the five in this game, notably. I don't think he actually played any minutes as a four in this game against John Henson and what the Bucks do. But how did you think he looked? And what do you just do you envision that at all he could be someone that's actually going to play a significant amount of five once they get everybody back?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that he certainly looked better than I would have expected for, a guy who hadn't played basketball in, a number of days. He was second on the Cavs in both usage at 30.9%, obviously trailing LeBron there, and in touches at 56, which was excellent to see just because, even though he only played 24 minutes, he was still second on the team in touches. And, I mean, seeing Kevin Love as a second option, even if it was in a shorter period of time than he'll probably end up playing once the playoffs roll around, was just really good to see him immediately kind of undertake that role, not really take any time to get back into that place in the pecking order. The Bucks have always been a solid matchup for him. It'd be interesting to see how he plays against Toronto and then going forward. But, it was a good first initial start for Kevin Love, and obviously he shot the ball extremely well, which is something that this team has been sorely lacking since he went out. Just, that shooting presence, whether it's Jeff Green or, Larry Nance Jr., Tristan Thompson, Zizic, whoever's been playing that center position, just, hasn't been able to kind of stretch the defense like Love showed in his stint on Monday.
Yeah, look at what you post this on Twitter, but he had the second highest usage rate on the team at 30.9%, and then he was second on the team in touches, and that was in a minutes restriction, which I think is a good sign. I think it's a sign that they are going to utilize him, they're going to not force things for other guys, and I think that, Nance will return, but Nance isn't a guy that's going to take up a lot of touches. Tristan Thompson's not a guy that's going to take up a lot of touches. Rodney Hood's the one guy that's probably going to get some touches, but the Cavs have not shown so far that they're going to force feed Rodney Hood, which I think is frankly a kind of a smart decision. We're going to talk more about him later, but with Love, I think the thing that I'm going to ask this at the arena, it's something I think we have to see what he has to say, what Nance and the coaching staff has to say, but I find it hard to believe he's going to play much five. Now, I think there's a scenario where Jeff Green, I think, and maybe ideally gets exercised from the rotation. The Cavs bank on Hood as a three, and then they have to maybe be a little bit small on the wing, which I think they can probably get away with to an extent. But I think the best LeBron at the four lineups might be Kevin Love at the five. I do like the idea of Tristan and Nance there as well. I think they all have their different perks and advantages. But I think one of the way that I think Love at the five could really be nice is, at least as a straight up five and not sort of a hybrid five, is LeBron at the four, get other shooters out there, let him get a little, do some work inside, clear out on some post-ups, just some things to me that he could do really well. I just don't know how much time there really is going to be for that with the three guys, with Jeff Green maybe being still in the rotation. We'll see what that is in the playoffs. But I think he's going to be a four, and it's weird for me to say that how good he was in his first game. I think it's fair to be skeptical that he's necessarily going to be a five like that on most nights and for a lot of meaningful minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right there. You know, just the Cavs have, you know, so many front court guys now. If you count Jeff Green as well, you'll have Jeff Green, Love, Thompson, Nance, and, you know, whatever is going to happen with Zizic going forward as well. So whether you think about it as four or five guys, you know, that's a lot of guys that you kind of have to find minutes for in that front court. And so playing Love at the four seems to be the reasonable solution to that. I think that he could potentially close games at the five, depending on the matchup. I think that, you know, a lot of who he's playing against or what he's doing is going to be matchup dependent.
Him as a five closing against earlier, Al Horford would be great, I think. I think if you have him against Boston,
right, yeah.
I mean, that makes
Toronto
a lot of sense.
Goes
yes.
Small, you know, if Toronto goes small and they play Serge Ibaka at the five to close games, then you'd probably like to see Love at the five to match up. But, you know, if Toronto's going to play Jonas Valanciunas and Serge Ibaka, then you probably see Love at the four, and you see Nance or Thompson at the five in those situations. So I think that it does give the Cavs a lot of freedom in terms of what they can do with their matchups. But we've seen earlier in the year, and obviously the personnel is different now, but, you know, Kevin Love really isn't a rim protector. LeBron usually does turn up his rim protection in the playoffs, but, you know, even so, it's difficult to see Kevin Love anchoring like a solid playoff defense from the five. So, you know, getting a guy who at least is going to potentially, you know, what it doesn't really matter, I guess. You probably have Love guarding the least mobile of the bigs either way. But, you know, the Cavs could potentially mount like a really strong defensive rebounding unit if they do have like a Thompson and a Love and a LeBron, or a Nance, Love and LeBron lineup out there in the playoffs, because, you know, over the course of, you know, these 10 to 15 games that they've played recently without Love, defensive rebounding has actually been one of the major issues for them. And you'd expect Love, especially if he's playing at the four, to really shore that up.
They rebounded really well with him at the five against the Bucks. Now, the Bucks were, I think, if not the worst rebounding team in the NBA, one of the very worst rebounding teams in the NBA this season. The Cavs are not a good rebounding team, really, for the year, but they just pounded the Bucks on the boards. I think Love is going to have a big role to play there. I think that's the one thing that I'm very sure he's going to, that and the spacing, I think he's just going to fit so well. I think whoever he plays with, it's just going to give them a boost to take some burden off LeBron if he can rebound really well at the four. And until you get to Houston, until you get to Golden State, I don't know if I have concerns about him playing the four in the East. I think, you know, Philly's weird and in a possible first round matchup, but Boston, don't really have that many concerns about it. I don't really have concerns against him playing the four against Toronto. You know, I like, even if they go small, I think he can probably handle a newbie and CJ Miles. I think he can make them. He's the type of guy that if they hunt that mismatch, I think it's actually a good idea to hunt that post up for him, because he's very good, and it's not like you're posting Marcus Morris on a guard or something like that. Like it's not necessarily going to be an inefficient move to use Kevin Love in that way. It's really, for me, until you get to Houston, until you get to the Warriors in possible finals matchups, I don't really think him at the four is that big of a liability. And then it, you know, becomes the same question we've seen. His rebounding would become even more important then. But I think him just settling into whatever role the Cavs decide for him is really, it's probably, in my mind, aside from getting healthy, the most important thing that's going to happen for this team between now and the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the big things that they have to figure out is how they're going to stagger Love and LeBron's minutes. You know, you would obviously like to see one of the two of them on the floor almost at all times from the playoffs. I'm personally always been in favor of LeBron starting the second quarter with the second unit. We've seen that work excellently in the past. I don't really see any reason to change that. Even though they don't have a guy like Kyrie Irving out there, you start, Love, and you have him kind of finish that first quarter or come very close to finishing that first quarter with the first unit, some of the second unit guys, and then, get LeBron hopefully 3 to 4 minutes of rest at the end of the first quarter and the end of the third quarter. And I think that that's kind of the best way to go about it. I just like, LeBron having those ball handling duties. I think that Jordan Clarkson's been a lot better this, this season when he's been on the Cavs, when he's played alongside LeBron. He certainly shoots a lot better from three when he plays alongside LeBron. And so I although Clarkson can be a solid creator, I think that, him playing with Love won't necessarily be as fruitful because we've seen that he's not like the greatest passer when he's been either in the pick and roll or just the primary handler. And a lot of the time he's looking for his own shot. And that's certainly gone well to a degree, but maybe him and Kevin Love together might not work as well just because Love isn't going to be getting like the touches that you would like him to be getting with LeBron James off the floor.
Yeah, I'm very much of the opinion that I think Love should start the fourth when LeBron sits, and then he should get a little – he has to get a little bit of a break in the middle. But I think he, just because of you want them to stagger minutes and you – in Clarkson, I think that's very fair concerns. How we've seen Clarkson play, what we know his track record is. But I think Love – when LeBron sits, he's going to have a lot of value there. I think you can run an offense through him. I think you can surround him with the right people, whether it's him at the five, whether it's him with another big, with Kyle Korver, with the type of shooting they can put around him. I think that's the recipe to lineups that I think make a lot of sense. Moving on, speaking of Korver and speaking of Rodney Hood, Korver has started recently at shooting guard. The Cavs have been without Rodney Hood because he was hurt against the Clippers, played later on the next week, and then hasn't been seen since after kind of coming back and then leaving again. They indicated when Hood made that switch that he was going to be the long-term starting two. Korver has fit in really nicely, has looked very comfortable. I think he's looked better playing with LeBron. Not a big shock there. I in thinking about this Raptors game in particular, I'm skeptical of Korver as a starter. I think it works against a lot of teams. I think Boston and Toronto are both teams that can make it a problem. Hood just has, just because he's younger, because he's a little longer, because he's more athletic at this point in their respective careers. He's not a great defender, but he can be someone that can be a little bit more impactful. I would trust him against DeRozan more than I would Korver. Korver would get murdered trying to defend DeMar DeRozan at this point in his career. I think he would admit that as well. It's just a bad idea for him. But when you look, regardless of what we see Wednesday, do you think one of them should start or the other? I kind of have tipped my hat, I think, at least a little bit. But do you have a preference on who should be the starting two guard for this team when this team is trying to start off the playoffs or the end of the regular season in a right way?
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points there. And of course, you look at the numbers and George Hill, Rodney Hood backcourt has a 122 defensive rating so far. A lot of that due to opponents shooting very well from three, 46%. Obviously, very unsustainable. That's over the course of 333 possessions. You switch Hood for Korver, and you now have a 99 defensive rating, but opponents are shooting 32% against that, which would be in the 93rd percentile of all lineups. So a lot of three-point shooting doing the work there. It is interesting to see that, Korver and Hood have a really solid defensive rating together, Korver and Hill. I do think that Kyle Korver has always been kind of an underrated team defender, but as you say, I mean, you're just not really going to trust Korver on like the elite two guards in the playoffs. I mean, even if you're going to put George Hill, say like if you're playing Indiana, you have to put George Hill on a guy like Oladipo, and then you're stuck with Korver, maybe on a Collison, maybe on a Corey Joseph, something like that. And there's still going to be issues there. I think, Korver's just not quick enough to handle those one-on-one situations. I think that he can be good off the ball, but you'd like to believe that Hood, even though he's not a great defender, will just kind of be able to be able to stay with those guys a little bit better, especially in on the ball situations. And, while Korver does open up a ton of things for the offense, especially playing alongside LeBron, just the ability that his spacing has on both, you know, LeBron and that George Hill pick and roll, or, you know, a LeBron and Larry Nance pick and roll when he comes back, or even like a Kevin Love post up. You can see that guys are just extremely reluctant to leave Kyle Korver wherever he is. And I think that that creates a lot of opportunities offensively. But you still have, you know, the Hill Hood backcourt posting a 120 offensive rating together. So, I mean, when you have guys like LeBron and Kevin Love playing together, whether they're with, you know, Kyle Korver or Rodney Hood, I think that generally your offense isn't going to really be an issue. And so, you know, although the spacing with Korver is certainly better and Korver has more firepower from the outside, I think that you do have to kind of hone in on the defensive end and hope that, you know, Hood can give you something there.
The other aspect of Hood and Korver that I think will be interesting to see how it plays out over the course of the playoffs is I think you hit on it with Korver. He has the more firepower, and I think it's just not necessarily that has the potential for more. I think it's more so that he's just probably going to be a little bit more consistent. When he's playing with LeBron, this is a guy that's going to take those open looks and make them. The Bucks game is a really good example of this. When he's comfortable and has the room and is in the flow of what's going on around him, and he's not being kind of frozen out and or just treated as a decoy, he gets going. Hood's just going to be more inconsistent. You can look at his track record for his career. This is a guy that has some really good games, and he has some games where he doesn't do much. His Cavs tenure has been very much that. You can look at the 1 11-point fourth quarter he had, and you look at games where he hasn't done very much. I wonder if they will try to... I wonder if they'll at least maybe think about trying Korver as the starter, just because it's an interesting idea. It is interesting to think about what that natural spacing can provide the starting lineup. It takes a little bit of pressure off Kevin Love to do that, especially even with Nance. I mean, just Nance, even if he's hitting those 18-footers, he's not providing you a lot of space. And I think in the playoffs, teams are probably going to let him shoot those even more so. You know, I think teams are just never going to abandon Kyle Korver. But I think, you know, round one, I think you'd probably do some weird matchups to get away with it. You know, Philly seems like a team that you actually probably could maybe do it. Toronto, I think you could. I think Wednesday, depending on what they do with Hood, it wouldn't shock me if they try to dip a Korver on OG or someone that's just not going to move as much and just hope it works. Boston's a little trickier.
That means that you put Jeff Green on DeRozan.
I mean, look, I think if Hood's not playing, I think you're going to get that, and I think that like. They use Jeff Green on James Harden this year. They use Jeff Green on point guards this year. I think that's just that. I just have accepted that in my brain, right? Like I've just accepted the fact that that's what we're gonna see because we know they are not gonna ask LeBron James to lock down DeMar DeRozan, right? Like at least several minutes.
When you're using Jeff Green like that, it's just. I think a larger indicator that, you know, there's just no way that he's not playing in the playoffs. And anybody who thinks that, you know, or is hopeful that he's going to be excised from the rotation, he's just asked to do too many things right now for me to believe that they're just going to be like, okay, you know, you're just not playing anymore. And, you know, maybe his minutes will be cut. He's obviously not going to play 40 minutes a game. But I just think that it's an inevitability that, you know, he's going to be asked to do stuff, especially if you get to the finals and you have to play the Warriors. I think you'll see a lot of Jeff Green for Kevin Durant.
The Cavs really need a guy like Jeff Green. It's just kind of not great that Jeff Green's not the backup for that guy, right? Like I think if they could do any significant upgrade this summer with LeBron, it's to find that guy. But I think I'm good either way with who they would start. I think Hood's probably the more logical answer, but I think there's upside to Korver, and I think there's a good argument for both. For me, it's a little less clear of what the exact right answer is, and I think it's going to be interesting to see kind of to how Larry Drew approaches it when they're all healthy and how Ty Lue talks about it and frankly how J.R. Smith factors into this as well. He went to the bench, you know. Could you see him end up starting again just because he's had success in that role before in the playoffs? He defended DeRozan well the past couple of years. I just wonder if they would think about that as well. To look at Ante Zizic, he has been, I think, really good since he's kind of been thrown into getting minutes because the Cavs have had no healthy bigs. He, you know, didn't play much against the Blazers, but he had a really, really good game against the Bucks. He shows really nice flow on the floor. He's moving very fluidly. He's got a nice touch. He's rebounding well, which I think is something they need. But when the Cavs are fully healthy, their front court is going to be Larry Nance, Kevin Love, who are going to play a lot, Tristan Thompson, who's going to play a lot, LeBron's going to play the four, you have Jeff Green in there. Zizic is probably the sixth guy in the 4-5 logjam. LeBron's going to play some five as well. But do you think he's earned, I mean, at least, Larry Jew said as much that he's in the conversation for minutes after the Bucks game. But do you buy that? I mean, do you think he's in a position where this frankly small sample size of him being pretty good should force some kind of conversation about what his role should be this season and not next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised with how Zizic has played since returning to the rotation 8 games ago. As you said, it's only a 110-minute sample, so still kind of small. His per 36 minutes are insane during that stretch. It's like 23 points and 11 rebounds. He's shooting like 79% from the field. So, you know, he's been much better than he was earlier in the year. Certainly much better than he was like on film during the summer league. So it's been interesting to see. You know, it's hard to say what's going to happen to him. I would think that, you know, it'd be at least interesting to see, like, for instance, how he plays against Toronto on Wednesday against like Jakob Poeltl off the bench. I think that that's like an intriguing matchup because it's something that, you know, you could potentially deploy him for in the playoffs, especially if the other team has like a, you know, a large center, a large hulking backup center, something along those lines. It might be interesting to give him some minutes in that role, but, you know, it's been kind of crazy just like how much more mobile he looks, for instance, since he's come back from the D League.
Yeah, I think all the work he put in Canton and then that he's put in daily with Vitaly Potapenko, who the Cavs assistant coach, the former NBA big man, has, you can see it's paid off. He looks so much more comfortable and not overwhelmed compared to where he was when he previously played. I like that assessment of what his role might be. I think that he's likely to just be cut. I think him and Jetty are both in this position where I think they both have an argument to get minutes. I think they've both played, I think, beyond maybe what the Cavs could have expected from them. But I think they're both going to end up on the cutting floor. But I think it's a good problem for the Cavs to have. They have not, in LeBron's second time around, and they didn't have this really last time either, young guys that were fighting for those minutes and made it a conversation that could give them some maybe cost-controlled lower options to replace veterans as those veterans age out, or if they, you know, need to use salary, like they can feel comfortable. It's like, okay, maybe Ante Zizic can actually be this for us next season. That is a really good problem to have, to not have just the minutes to play that guy. I think he's getting there. I think he's certainly making mistakes. He picks up some tacky fouls. You know, he's still going to be, I think, be a defensive problem for the Cavs in certain aspects when he gets attacked on the pick and roll, although he's handled it pretty well so far. I think him as a backup against teams like Toronto, again, as insurance for Tristan Thompson in case he, you know, battles another injury again, I think that's a good, I think that is kind of where he ends up settling in. But I think you're right in saying that maybe teams that have those bigs and that could get them in foul trouble, but wouldn't shock me if we see him pop up in a Toronto series if Tristan and Nance get in foul trouble, because Toronto could keep playing big and the Cavs, you know, probably are better off playing low, keeping low at the four and going Zizic at the five instead of, say, sliding Jeff Green into the four and playing Love at the five. I think they're probably better off trying to go big with Zizic than trying to play small without a four who can shoot. Because Green can't shoot. I'd rather just play Zizic and trust that you're going to get something smooth out of him than letting the Raptors clog up the paint by just abandoning Jeff Green outside.
So I have a question for you. Where do you think that the Cavs rank in terms of percentage allowed at the rim since they made the trades?
Field goal percentage at the rim. Knowing the defense has been better, not really having checked that number, I'm gonna guess somewhere like 14th, something like that.
Fourth. So the Cavs only trail Portland, the Pelicans, and Oklahoma City,
which
in field goal percentage allowed at the rim.
Which is interesting 50%. Because so Portland, you know, has Nurkic and has played some really good team defense. The Cavs just saw that. You have Anthony Davis in New Orleans, and then you have Steven Adams and the variety of guys that are good defenders on the OKC team. That is really interesting. I wonder, you know, I think Nance obviously probably deserves a lot of credit there, and you having knowing that you've seen the stat, you probably thought about this more than me, but it's that is very interesting, and I that's something I think we're gonna have to consider. Does the and watch that number and see if it continues from now until the end of the regular season, once they do get everybody healthy and we actually kind of at least get a better idea of what the roster looks like.
So the second part of the question is, what do you think Ante Zizic is allowing at the rim? He's defended 28 field goal attempts during that time, which is eighth on the team.
I'm going to say I'm going to do the math real quick here, but I have a guess on the number. I kept kind of track of this the other night, but I'm going to guess something like maybe like upper 20%, like 26-ish.
42.9%.
Okay. Well, I'm apparently turning Ante Zizic is Rudy Gobert in my tired eyes, apparently.
Opponents are 12 of 28 against him at the rim, which is 19% better than expected over that period of time. He's the best on the Cavs in that area. The second best over that time is Jeff Green, allowing 50% shooting at the rim. LeBron at 54%. Nance is at 63% allowed, which is right about average. And then Tristan Thompson is all the way down at 77% shooting allowed at the rim over that time period.
It would be very interesting to see how the lineups that they've played in kind of affect that too. And I think Tristan, what his health looks like is going to just be fascinating when he gets back. Because he had that stretch where he looked better, and I think he just got a little banged up again. And I wonder if he looks good. He's past the mark where he's supposed to be back, and I wonder if the Cavs are being cautious with him. To move on from this, the Cavs are going to have to make rotation trims. I think they're at 11 guys, and if you could go up to 12, based on how, and them including Jose Calderon of late, they're going to have to make cuts to this rotation. They're going to have to put guys into warm-up gear for entire games. That's just going to happen. Who, in your mind, are the guys that are definite cuts, and who to you is on the fringe of the rotation? I think for me, Zizic and Osman, I think, are definitely going to get cut. I just think it's inevitable, even if Jetty and Zizic have earned their minutes. They're the two likely guys. Calderon, I think, obviously. And I think that gets you to 9, if I'm counting correctly. But I think that's where you start. And I think one of them maybe gets some minutes early on. But I think that the core is still going to be that veteran mix of LeBron and Love and Tristan and Korver and the guys that have been here, and then all of the new guys that have come in.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at the starting lineup of, you know, Hill, LeBron, Kevin Love and Larry Nance, and then you're adding to that, you know, either Korver, Hood, that gets you to 6 guys. As you said, Tristan gets you to 7, JR gets you to 8, and Clarkson gets you to 9. And, you know, maybe that's kind of where you cut it off. Jeff Green, it seems as if he'll be in the rotation as well, in my opinion. Whether it's kind of that 9-10 mark right there, I think that's probably all that they'll be willing to go in the playoffs. It'll be interesting to see if that's matchup dependent as well. As we've seen in the past, there are certainly better opponents for a guy like Osman, especially if they have a lot of like size guys who are a little bit bigger. They might want to deploy him for, 4 minutes at the start of the second quarter or something like that, just to, get his energy and stuff like that. But I think that those guys end up being kind of more matchup dependent rather than, being in the core of the rotation, as you kind of mentioned.
I think you're right about Osman, and I think there's going to be series where certain guys, for me, are going to fall out of favor. Like, I think there are definitely series where I'm not going to love – I want to trust LeBron to have the ball in his hands, where I'm going to be a little bit hesitant to lean on Clarkson as much, I think, especially defensively. Korver might have some issues in series. I think Jeff Green's going to definitely have some issues in series, and the health of all these guys matters. You could see them if let's say Tristan gets hurt or something like that, and you obviously don't want him to, but if he is dealing with something nagging, maybe they go small with Jetty instead of Zizic. I think these are certainly things that are on the table, but I think you're right. I think nine is very much kind of the parameters of what Ty Lue has said he wants to do, of what sort of teams generally do. Teams don't, they shrink the rotation, they play guys more. It's also going to be interesting because we just don't know how some of these pieces fit together just yet. Remember, Kevin Love has not played a game with Larry Nance or Rodney Hood yet. They have not really seen how that front court potential starting and closing front court works together. We have not seen, you know, Love anchor a bench unit necessarily at full steam with the type of guys that he's probably going to play with, like Clarkson and whatnot, because he was on that minutes restriction the other night. And actually came in back in after LeBron came back in based on how many minutes he was allowed to play. There are so many questions we just don't know. Tristan's been out for a while that it's really hard for me to sort of know what that's going to look like. Even if I feel like I know the nine guys with the two subs there for that rotation, it feels weird for me to kind of say that. I just don't know exactly what this, the flow of this is all going to look like. And it's one of the real complicating factors of Lue not being around. Even if Larry Drew says this is these are Ty's decisions to make, when Ty comes back and when he can go full back at this, and if you really can go full back at this based on his health, is just something that really complicates the situation that he is unfortunately in because of his health. And obviously his health comes first, but if he's going to come back and come back at a time where he is going to be the guy really kind of setting up these moves before the end of the regular season, it's complicated. And I think that when guys come back is going to be interesting. Like, we don't, as of right now, as we record this, we don't know if Tristan and Hood are going to play Wednesday. We don't know if Nance is going to be back yet, but the sooner they get them back, the easier this probably ends up being, even if stuff probably gets shuffled in a series. It wouldn't shock me if we're seeing stuff that's different game to game, just because they're not going to have a lot of time to workshop some of these lineups.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, too, about, you know, the difference between Drew and Ty Lue. And, you know, that might not manifest itself, you know, right away. But, you know, when you're in the heat of the battle, no matter what you guys talk about before the game, I think that, you know, different coaches have different styles. They'll ride different guys. We saw it with Mike Brown when Steve Kerr was battling his own health issues last year. You know, Mike Brown would ride their starters and go to the death lineup a lot earlier. And that was just kind of, you know, his unique style when he was on the bench. And, you know, I think that Larry Drew will be in that position and, you know, he'll have to make his own choices at some point in time. And you might see him do something different than, you know, what Ty Lue does if he, you know, eventually comes back and is able to return to the bench. So that's just kind of another factor in all of this where the Cavs are already kind of going to be shuffling through rotations. There's not a ton of games left. You know, they're obviously, I think that their first goal, as we discussed earlier, is kind of getting Kevin Love acclimated and getting him comfortable and then everything kind of falling into place from there. But, you know, you have a lot of goals, you know, between now and, you know, the first round of the playoffs, and everything might not be, you know, perfectly in place in the first round of the playoffs either. And some things might have to be shaken up a little bit and there might be matchup dependent moves, but that's what you get when you have a team that's deeper than it's been in previous years. And there's certainly more uncertainty, but there's a lot more, you know, lineup combinations and different things that they can try out. So, you know, they should be able to match up with other teams regardless of what other teams are doing, because they have such variant personnel where, you know, they can play a bunch of different guys at the five, at the four, at the three, at the two. So there's a lot of guys who could potentially crack the playoff rotation. And, you know, that's obviously something that's difficult for the coaches to overcome, but it's a good problem to have, and a better problem to have than only having seven playable guys and needing to play nine.
It's too much to ask of the Cavs, who, and whenever Lue gets back, whatever the situation ends up being, to figure all of this out by the playoffs, right? Like, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect them to have to figure some of this out in round one in a Philly series or an Indiana series or whoever they play. I think that logically that's kind of where this is going to be headed.
Yeah, I mean, there's only 12 games left. And as you said, you know, just now, we don't know if we're going to see all these guys back on Wednesday or Friday, you know, or Friday or whatever it is. And so, you know, if they're not back on Wednesday, then there's 11 games left and, you know, 10 games left. So, you know, certainly, you know, 480 minutes isn't enough to kind of figure out your entire rotation. And it's probably going to take over into the first round of the playoffs. And we'll probably see some lineups in the playoffs that, you know, we haven't seen before, but that's not something new. The Cavs last year in the playoffs were playing lineups that they didn't play all season. And that's just sometimes the nature of a matchup. And you see a guy like Channing Frye who emerges in the playoffs and just has a really great series because his shooting is very, very difficult to guard for a team that plays a traditional center. And, you know, that might happen to someone on this Cavs team this year that we're not expecting. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of the playoffs. You need different guys to step up, and the Cavs have a lot of guys who could potentially be in that position. So, you know, whoever it might be, as I said before, at least they have those options as opposed to, you know, earlier in the year when you were kind of wondering how the bench was going to fill itself out.
Just a quick bit of news we're going to throw in here. Kyle Korver is not going to, he's not expected to play Wednesday. This is per a statement from the team. His younger brother, Kirk, died at age of 27 after becoming seriously ill last week. This is why he went to be with his brother. His family issued last week that kept him out. He missed the win in Chicago. He left the team on Friday, played Monday, obviously started, played well on Monday, but he is not going to, it seems like he's not going to play against Toronto. So that depending on what Hood is active, we don't really know who's going to start at the two. It doesn't seem like Jetty's going to be back either, but thoughts to Kyle Korver and his entire family for the loss of Kirk Korver. But that, if anything we talked about with Kyle Korver, is obviously going to look a little bit different now in terms of just Wednesday beyond. I think it all still applies. But Mike, aside, now that knowing now that Korver isn't going to play, knowing, you know, kind of sort of not knowing exactly what we're going to be looking at with this team exactly as we recorded this on Tuesday night, what are you actually looking for on Wednesday? I personally don't think we're going to learn very much. I don't expect to learn anything of value. I basically am just going to be more interested if a lot of guys end up being able to play. But I'm not expecting very much. Are you expecting to feel like you get anything out of this game that you could apply for a possible conference finals matchup?
No, I mean, not for a conference finals matchup. You know, the main thing that I'll just be watching is to see how Kevin Love continues to look. You know, obviously, after Isaiah Thomas came back earlier this year and played two tremendous games in his first two games and really never played well again, just tracking Love, I think, is important. Just, you know, seeing how the Cavs continue to use him. You know, Coach Drew said it, and it was true of the last game that, you know, on Monday, they did start running a lot of plays that they had put in for Kevin Love, you know, before he got injured. And some of those were plays that they had only been running for a few weeks to that time. So it was good to see them, you know, have the new guys ready to run those sets. You know, some of those wide pin downs for Love to get him a three, and some of those Minnesota sets that they had in for him. So I thought that was really nice to see on Monday. I'll be looking for that type of stuff. But, you know, in terms of actual matchup stuff, if the Cavs aren't healthy, there's really not much you can learn going against this Toronto team. So the game will be a building block for Love. And, you know, hopefully guys will start to make their way back from injury and the Cavs will get closer to whole. But, you know, there just hasn't been a ton to take away from these last few weeks because of all the injuries.
It's one of the most frustrating parts of covering this team right now, just so little to learn with all the guys in and out of the lineups and the injuries that have mounted up. But we're going to talk to Mike more and more as the season goes on. Find him on Twitter at evzagana11. Find his writing and for the sort, his podcasting, and as well as here at the Cav Analytics Podcast. Mike, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Always appreciate it.
Again, best way to support the podcast, go to on iTunes, 5-star rating and review. Please go there and support the pod. It's the best way to support the Locked On Cavs podcast. And also, go in the show notes, click the link, and buy the Pet Dinosaurs t-shirt from Breaking Tee. Some of that money comes back to Fear the Sword. You'll support our blogging. You'll support this podcast as well. And thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday.